welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here again on the Connecting the Dots podcast to talk about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective. And today, I have as my guest, my dear good friend, Mr. Tony Vicinda. Tony Vicinda is, he's just a jack of all trades, doing lots of stuff. He does youth ministry here at St. Luke's Catholic Church in Seattle, Washington. And part of what he does to fund the many irons in the fire that he has, doing all kinds of good works for the kingdom of God, is he runs Barbados Beard Balm, the Catholic Beard Balm Company, which you can go online and check out. And so I thought we would just have the enterprising, dynamic, wonderful Tony Vicinda on the show today to talk about all the work that he is doing out there in the world. How are you doing, Tony?
Doing good, Mark. How are you doing today?
I am very good. This is a rare interview in that I'm actually talking to somebody that I actually see and know and meet on a semi-regular basis, as opposed to somebody who lives way far away who I have never actually met. So,
Do you ever have the experience, I know when I go out to speak at conferences or events or work with youth ministers, mm-hmm. of encountering people you've known for a long time on the internet, or more creepily, people who have known you or might know a lot about you, and what are those and engaging with those people in interesting and unique ways?
Yes. Well, you know, a part of it is, especially if there's no picture involved, you always construct a picture mm-hmm. of the person that you're talking to. So, for example, I have a friend who lives in Scotland, who had this very, how should you put it? It was a very Episcopalian sounding name, Tamara Horsburg. And it had this sort of very English. So I had this picture built up in my mind of her, of, you know, kind of, sandy blonde hair, you know, high cheekbones, delicate features, and et cetera, et cetera. That was the picture that I constructed in my mind based solely on the name Tamara Horsburg. And, so then she belongs to this group in Glasgow. She's an American expatriate married to a Scot. And she belonged to this Catholic group at the University of Glasgow that was doing this big conference on the Works of Mercy. And so they wanted to have me come out and speak. And so to get that arranged, we needed to do some Skype calls. So I Skype her. And it turns out she looks absolutely nothing like, and she sounds absolutely nothing like what I was sort of expecting this kind of lilting Virginia accent or something, you know? Yeah. And it turns out that she's from like Queens or Brooklyn or something. Yeah. And so, you know, she talks, you know, every sentence ends with a fishhook. And it was this whole thing. And her mom, I think her mom was like, I forget, like from, I don't know, India or somewhere in the Mideast or something like this, you know, and such coal black hair and, you know, just, looked like she was from, you know, somewhere in India or the Mideast. And it was like, but you do that. Your mind does that whenever you talk to strangers on the internet, is you just construct these pictures of how you imagine they look. And yeah, so you do have that weird thing where people come up to you and they know a lot more about you.
Yeah. When people come up to me and start talking to me about my children, I know I can't tell my wife afterwards or else I'll get yelled at, because uh-huh. that means I've said too much on the internet. Uh-huh.
You'll notice that I sometimes, now that my kids are grown up and they can defend themselves and I don't have some fear that some weirdo is going to grab them, you know, I can talk more about my kids because they're all like you, big, beefy guys, you know.
So, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
So how's it going? What's happening? What's new?
Oh man, we're busy right now. So we're getting ready to kick off the year at St. Luke's. And so I'm putting together all of our adult small group and home group and the youth ministry pieces. Our team's been really hard at work getting all that stuff ready, which is, you know, filming small group series and writing questions and putting together content and organizing folks. On top of that, we moved Catholic Bomb Co. to a shipper recently, and we just discovered there had been some huge disconnects in the orders going out. There were about 150 orders that ended up backlogged because just of a way things didn't connect properly. And so just a lot of, you know, Insanity Plus was at a national dialogue last week on youth and young adult ministry for Project YM, which is our main apostolate outside of the parish.
Okay.
And then a couple of weeks ago, I decided to launch a podcast with Father Colin Parrish. And so it's been, I thought, you know, hey, September seems kind of slow. I'll add an extra project in, and other things got backed up into September and cropped up as they often do. So it's been a busy but good few weeks.
Well, that's cool. Tell me more about this, the national dialogue that you were at.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. And I was, you know, I was talking to somebody else about it the other day, and I was worried I gave them too negative of an impression because of some of my observations. The national dialogue is really this great process that the National Federation of Catholic Youth Ministers, which is the USCCB's kind of adjunct organization on Catholic youth ministry. The USCCB itself, some adult serving groups, they invited Bishop Caggiano, who's in the Diocese of Bridgeport, invited those groups to find as many people as they could who would want to come in and talk about how we have better conversations about and with youth and young adults in the Catholic Church. And not just for Catholic youth and young adults, but how we as church better respond to the needs of youth and young adults across the U.S. And so this meeting was about 65, mostly organizations that were representative. Project YM was one of them. You also had groups like LARED representing Catholic Hispanic ministry, college campus ministry groups. Catholic Match was in the mix also too. NET, National Evangelistic Team. So people just doing great ministry. Some of my friends from Alpha and Young Life were there. So a pretty diverse group, not the people who always gather for these conversations, just to talk about, you know, what are the big questions we need to be asking? What are the people we need to be talking about them with? And how do we do that well? So it was really walking in at the beginning of that time with a very abstract idea of we need to have conversations better. And we need to come around the table together to do that. Mm-hmm. And walking out with kind of a 3-year plan for how we do that better. One of the things that I expressed as a struggle was I really want that to be a response to the gospel call. Mm-hmm. And part of the significant challenge is we as Catholic organizations oftentimes really struggle with putting that in the middle of what we're doing. We're very comfortable with the process. We're very comfortable with a lot of other pieces. And when we talk about putting Christ in the middle of what we're doing, our response is often to just say, well, we'll just have Mass as part of it, which is absolutely a way that we do that. Mm-hmm. Especially when the liturgies are beautiful and engaging. The liturgies aren't always beautiful and engaging, but the ones we had this week actually were great. But then it's how do we let that flow into the conversation? How do we let that infuse everything we're doing? How do we actually really offer this conversation up to Christ? And that's a process that as an institutional church, lots of times we're rediscovering how to do. And so, that was kind of one of my challenge points for the future. And I don't put that on anybody but myself and the people gathered in that room to say, we need to figure out how to do that better.
Okay. Okay. Now, my understanding, we both know, Sherry Waddell, and the, her work with, Forming Intentional Disciples. Mm-hmm. How has that influenced the work that you're doing?
Pretty profoundly. So, I'm a huge Sherry fan, and actually, I got to hang out with Dr. Bob Rice, who's from the Franciscan University of Steubenville, and we had this great conversation while we were at the National Dialogue. We probably weren't supposed to, we were probably supposed to be doing something else then, but we were just sitting down and having coffee while something else was going on.
Okay.
And talking about, you know, going through the process and what we were experiencing. We were supposed to be doing it. It was a reflection time and he was my partner.
Okay.
But we were talking about how we often target people's formational state based on age rather than where they're at in their spiritual journey. And I think one of the main things that Sherry's work really helps us understand better is that that's actually not the best way to be forming people. Being aware of their station of life, their demographic needs, those are important things. But if we're treating all second graders like they're at the same level of formation, or all middle schoolers and high schoolers like they're at the same stage of formation, or all adults, most concerningly, like they're at the same stage of formation or the same place in their spiritual journey, we're actually doing them a big disservice, and we see a lot of disconnect. And I was kind of observing that wouldn't it be interesting if we actually were really intentional about how we were forming people at like basically a stage of, like, if you're at your call to holiness, like if you're just being formed in what it means to be a disciple, if you're just becoming curious in that, we should be forming you a certain way. If you've made a commitment to that as a disciple, then we need to be forming you for mission and apostolate. And so we should be really looking at how we're forming you in your specific vocation. And before that, we need to look at how we're forming people in community before any of that starts, how we're actually inviting them to be a part of church, to understand the significance of what the church might look like, the local parish might look like, if it was really approached as a family that's helping you grow in an awareness of who you are. That a lot of that comes straight out of Sherry's stuff. You know, she talks about the different thresholds of discipleship, going from trust, through curiosity to openness to searching to intentional discipleship. And I think it's a great articulation of a lot of what I would desire for us to be doing, which is not to be having a mechanical process where just pushing young people and adults into, but actually engaging them in a relationship, helping them and discerning with them where they're at in their spiritual journey, and then figuring out specifically actually what is most beneficial to them based on all of those needs. And so that was a significant part of the conversation. And that really does inform a lot of the work that we do at Project YM. We never want to assume that somebody, just because they've been a lifelong Catholic, actually has a relationship with Jesus. We also don't want to say they don't, because a lot of them do.
Right.
But we want to actually engage that person and finding out kind of where they're at, which is hard when you're in a room of, 200 to 3,000 teenagers, or when you're in a room full of, 300 church workers who came because it's a professional development day and they may or may not really want to be there, but they might have felt a little pressure, or they were just looking to get out of the office for the day, or they just want to spend time with other people who get it. You know, diving into that, you don't have the opportunity to do that one-on-one. So the challenges for how you do that systematically are really hard, are really challenging. And that's a lot of the work that we try to focus on. Things that really embrace the individual, but can be done on a very scalable way, both at my parish and in the ministry work that we do.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fantastic. And of course, it leads to really the central thing that you are doing for the kingdom of God, which is selling beard balm.
It does. I don't know if that's the central thing I do. It is the most impactful, right? Like, I have more people who have engaged in my beard balm than anything else.
It is, I just think that's, it's hilarious, actually. I mean, I think this is just, one of the great little American success stories, because, the whole beard balm thing is entirely exists just in order to fund your ministry. It's a classic nonprofit thing, right? You're not getting rich off of this. It all gets farmed back into doing all these great things for kids.
So we fund our all of our online projects through that. We have a missionary center in Chattanooga that we just opened. My business partner, Michael, just moved there to really start doing itinerant ministry work that's just grounded and rooted in the Diocese of Knoxville and the city of Chattanooga, where the population is about 5% Catholic, and it's a very adversarial place to do ministry if you can't engage the wider culture.
Right.
We fundraise for Uganda. We actually partner with Brandon Bott as one of our primary supporters in that, who works with Bishop Barron.
Isn't Brandon great? I love that guy.
My gosh. Oh my gosh, he's amazing.
I love that. He's just like a human dynamo. He's doing all this stuff. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So he helps underwrite part of that also too. So we actually have paid and funded for the first two full-time youth ministers in the diocese of Masaka, Uganda. It's the first people who have actually been full-time youth workers. And that's, you know, people being paid justly is an important thing very, very much for us as Catholics.
Right.
But the real reason we did that is because a lot of the people who are doing ministry are doing phenomenal things. They have, you know, they'll do a Tuesday day, like they'll start with daily mass. They'll have, you know, an hour of silent adoration afterwards, and then they'll do a 4-hour, catechism session. And they have people who will walk the day before, sleep outside overnight, and then be there all day long. And it's thousands of people coming to this one parish to do that. And they have a lot of young people in that mix, and they really desire to serve them. So they have a session for them, but the people who are running that work 2 or 3 other jobs. And so their ability to serve them just time wise is greatly reduced. And so we want to pay them not so that, you know, because they need to be paid, though that's a part of it. They have funds, they have finances, but they don't have a budget, and they also don't have the ability to give the time that they could. And so when they're reaching, when you see a parish that's reaching thousands of young people on a Tuesday in the middle of the day who are coming and walking half a day the day before, spending the night outside so that they can be a part of something.
I know.
I just want to free those people up to be able to focus on that and multiply that ministry.
That is amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. And so, I mean, Americans would never do that, right? Like we have to offer them donuts to get 20 people to show up.
Right.
At one of our events. And so
you get so much.
That ministry is powerful.
Yeah. You get so much bang for the buck. You know, in Africa, I mean, a dollar goes an incredibly long way. And the response is so huge. I have a number of friends online, that I've made in Africa. I have one guy, he's like this gung-ho, you know, Catholic evangelist, Nigerian guy. And he wrote me out of the blue, you know, several years ago. He calls me Uncle Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just this going concern, you know, just this passionate evangelist living in Nigeria, Nigerian guy. And I've got, you know, other friends, you know, there's lots of indigenous ministries that have sprung up. These are not like Western efforts of Westerners going into Africa and doing stuff. This is all stuff that's being done by African Catholics, who are just unbelievably zealous. And there's just this, you really feel like this apostolic spirit. It feels like the first century.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really, they teach us something deep about our Catholic identity that we've lost. They teach us what it means to really live in a fully missionary culture, to really live with this apostolic zeal, to really live in a place where they would give and give and give for the gospel, that in the Western world where we've become so, quote unquote, and intelligent and developed, but really so wealthy and apathetic, that we've left a lot of that behind. It's become easier to be Christian. And so therefore we've attached less value to it a lot of the time.
Okay.
And so I just love that reminder of it.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, you're really spreading out. You're doing a lot of stuff, you know, and, I just think that that's fantastic. And, you know, and you are, I mean, speaking of, you know, first century, this is like Priscilla and Aquila, you know, you're not a priest, you're not a deacon, you're not ordained in any way, you're just a lay guy, a married guy, with kids who, you know, you guys come swimming with us at the lake in the summer, and we hang out and play, you know, we didn't play test this, and but you're doing all of this work, and part of the reason I wanted to have you on is because I think it's really important that people see lay models of apostolic work, and that's what you're doing. How did you wind up doing this?
I mean, we could get theological and just talk about general baptism call and the support of the Holy Spirit. But I mean, sure. Specifically, I mean, and that's all very true. Like that, I mean, that from my time as a kid, I was in a parish that loved me, and that love transformed me and made me know I was rooted and had a place. When I was seeking and searching and asking questions, nobody ever treated me like I was dumb or dismissed me. Actually, lots of times they let me challenge them with my questions. And sometimes they just say, we don't have the answers, but you know, here are some places we can look to find out. You know, nobody ever said, you know, you shouldn't be pursuing this on your own. I was continually encouraged by those around me to go and try and do in the area of my faith, and continually equipped and empowered to do that. And that's a very unique experience, unfortunately, in the American church today. And so, you know, my call into ministry was very much facilitated by the first time I actually listened to Jesus. I had encountered him a number of times, and I talked to him a whole lot, but the first time I ever actually stopped and listened to him and didn't know how to do that, but just said, God, I want to try this. I want to try to hear your voice in my life. It's a pretty powerful experience. And it was, and from that, like really, I mean, once God had told me to go do this, I mean, you know, it didn't really matter what anybody else said outside of that, of the how we might pursue that. So, you know, that's a huge part of it, is really just being motivated by a sense of call and being empowered by a community to continue to pursue these things, and then a lot of them. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, this is a work that your wife, Trish is involved with as well. I mean, she's part of this, and
yeah,
you're doing this together.
Yeah. We have a model really, both myself and Michael, my coworker, we really try to involve our wives as much as possible, for one thing, so that we see them sometimes. But, from another thing, like we really do desire that what we do is motivated by our sense of family, and the sense of who we are as husbands and as spouses and as fathers. And we don't want that to be separated. So we're really seeking, I mean, what a lot of people might call authenticity, but I think it's such a buzzword today. I would really talk about it as integration. Like we really want an integrated experience of ministry and apostolic life, where we're taking our families somewhere, and we're not great at it. Like, I mean, I'll be honest, we mess up all the time. It's really hard. I know that you, Mark, are just perfect in that area, but, for the rest of us, we have to struggle along.
When you're a living saint, it's such a burden because people look up to you so much, you know, and you know, you have to live this life of sinless perfection every day. And, yeah. So I just try to be that for you. You
know? We appreciate that. So, yeah. So yeah. And Trisha also serves as a really good counterbalance when I've bitten off more than I can chew. So yeah. When she tells me you can do this, like when I wanted to launch a new podcast, you know, our most recent project, you know, she was really supportive of that. You know, she was really excited about, you know, me getting Father Parrish involved, so it wasn't all on my shoulders, the ability to actually develop my own voice a little bit more, because everything I've done in the past has been massively collaborative and more organizational. And it's really something that, you know, was me being able to express something I love doing and do on a regular basis around the house. Sometimes I think it's just like, oh yeah, you need to turn that into a hobby so that you stop trying to get me to do it with you.
You know, one of the most liberating things that ever happened in my marriage was the day that Jan said, I don't have to be involved in everything that you do.
Right.
Yeah. Just, you know, go do your thing. And, it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and it's hard because when you live in a ministerial place, it's actually really easy. And it's something I've been talking to guys a lot about lately who are in ministry. It's really easy for your spiritual calling, to be good for your wife. It's really easy for your ministry work to be detrimental to your wife. You know, and that to kind of squelch out your relationship with her, or to turn everything you guys do as in your spiritual lives into work, which is a real challenge sometimes. So figuring out how to really encourage your spouse to have their own spiritual identity, how to deal with that kind of judgment. That's something I'm figuring out right now.
Yeah.
And she's been challenging me on a lot in really good ways. And I've really appreciate that, even though it's hard, you know, hard and it's, you know, a challenge. So yeah, whenever she lets me do something new, I'm always, you know, really excited, especially when she encourages me, because it really is a sign to me that, okay, this is going to be, this is going to be good. If Trisha's convinced we can do this, then it's going to be a good thing. And so, I always really try to be more receptive to that than I've ever been in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it is, I mean, one of the things that I find that I have to do sometimes, you know, because I spend my time thinking and writing about the faith, and you spend your time, you know, doing Catholic stuff, for a living, you know. And it is, you know, I mean, the revelation of the faith is that God is our Father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really easy to turn God into your employer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like, God is not my employer, you know, and the Catholics around me are not like fellow employees, you know, with all of the, that's not how you're supposed to be viewing fellow Catholics, you know.
Right.
And so that can be difficult, you know, because, you know, part of the, one of the things that I find challenging about being a Catholic is that it is one of the mysteries of the faith. I was talking about this with a friend the other day. One of the mysteries of the faith is that no small part of the cross that you bear is other Catholics. You know? It is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just just how it is. And anybody who's lived in the church long enough, I think, recognizes this, you know, that some of the greatest sources of pain and suffering in my life have just been other Catholics, you know, who, for what, you know, they let you down, or they hate you, or you can't stand them, or, you know, whatever. And,
right.
You know, you're not supposed to say that, you know, but it's the truth, you know, it's just how life is. And, so, you know, that's part of the struggle, but it's also incredibly rewarding too. I mean, you know, you hear back from people who, you know, you hear from, and you must get this, you know, you hear from people who say, thank you, I never saw this before, and this changed my life, you know?
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, I mean, so that's the way that Father Parrish and I will talk about it a lot is really, I mean, it's an early church understanding. It's not about, like, Jesus didn't come to make the bad people good. He came to make the dead people alive.
Oh,
right?
So
understanding that, like, we're not called to the moralism, like, to moralistically treating our neighbor with some sort of, you know, legalistic measuring stick about how, you know, good, bad, whatever they are. We're called to really enter into, helping those around us become more alive, to become more abundantly alive. And that really does transform what is this seemingly unbearable cross into this glorious awareness of, like, I'm not just, like, you know, I'm not just teaching people about these abstract ideas, or, you know, I'm not just, you know, making beard balm that somebody's husband really liked. The stories we get back, or the ways I encounter people in ministry, those are oftentimes things that are very rooted in my relationship was dying. You know, my relationship with my spouse, my relationship with God, my relationship with my parents, my relationship with my friends was dying. And this way that I've encountered Christ now, through whatever part of ministry that we do, has given new life to that, or given me the ability to become receptive to the way that God is offering new life in that. And that is, those stories are the most rewarding parts of the ministry work that we do. I would go through so much to have any one of those stories. And I mean, oftentimes I do, but it's really humbling to see what God does in ways that you will never expect.
Right.
And I'm always just blown away at the way that he shows up through some of the work that we do. And
yeah.
So.
Well, you know, and part of the, one of the sort of unexpected benefits I've discovered of being Catholic is that because the faith is incorrigibly public, everything about the faith is public. You know, our worship is public. Everything that the church has to say is public. We're not a Gnostic sect. There are no mm-hmm. inner secrets. You know, you want to know what the faith says? Well, here's several billion books about it. You know? You know, and because the faith is so public, what you say about the faith tends, the ripples go out, you know, and so you find, and I've had this happen many times, you know, you find that something you said or wrote 20 years ago, all of a sudden, here's some person that you, from, you know, in my case, Turkey, you know, who like read this thing that you wrote 20 years ago, and now she's a Catholic. And it's like, wow, that's, I wasn't expecting that sitting here in my Hobbit Hall in Mount Lake Terrace, Washington, you know, that somebody in Turkey would be affected by something that I said or did. And so that's got to be satisfying for you too, you know, because you're, you know, you're forming young minds and hearts.
Yeah. Well, and it's really interesting. So, so I mentioned Father Parrish just a second ago. He just got assigned as the associate pastor at our parish, at least for a couple of years. And it's going to be a huge blessing to have two priests for a few years. We don't know if that'll be a continual thing at St. Luke's, but for right now, we're just celebrating the reality of that, but also just the relationship of Father Parrish, who is somebody who our community actually deeply cared for because he was there as a seminarian, right? He and I, we just launched this podcast called The Threshold Podcast, right? And the goal is to sit down with people and talk about what they believe, why they believe it, and how they came to believe that. So just the significance of faith. And, you know, we have a lot of Catholic guests on there, and the goal is to have a lot of non-Catholic guests also, and just to build bridges of trust. It's all based on Sherry's work that we were talking about earlier, and just having conversations about, you know, where God is at for them. But we get these beautiful, beautiful stories. But in a day of information, it's really interesting. Like, I can see where people in the world are downloading the podcast that. And so the first night we released it, I woke up the next morning and just kind of looked at the metrics. And, you know, you have people in Korea and people in Malta and people all over the world, mostly in the U.S., but all over the world in places that have very different cultures who are engaging in this new endeavor of ours, right? And this ability to say there are a lot of parts of the world where it's being downloaded that are very unchristian parts of the world. And so the ability to know that there are people out there who are hearing the gospel, and not in a, like, you know, hey, you know, we're going to sit down and break down the four-part kerygma, but we're going to actually just talk to some Catholics about what they believe. And we're also going to let people experience accompaniment and the presence of Christ through just compassionate listening and not trying to say, well, here's where you're wrong, but hearing what they're talking about and hearing the good and the true and the beautiful in that. And then naming, like, in our tradition, how that resonates, right? Naming, like, in our experience of faith, here's where we find that same thing. And it's so great to sit down with an atheist or a Buddhist or a universalist Christian or somebody, you know, somebody else who has a completely different experience. And for us to know, like, this is how God is working in their life, even if they're not seeing that or they're not receptive or they wouldn't name it that way. And that's being able to see that a little bit more in real time, it makes it so much easier. Like, I can't, I can't imagine what it was like before that point. And so I just do love the fact that as much as the ubiquitousness of technology, it can be a real struggle. Sometimes some of the ways that it creates an ability to actually see, hey, here's some of the fertile ground this is falling on. And some of that may be rocky ground, you know, but like we actually know where to check later on for fruit. Like we know where to look for fruit later on.
And that's, I think that's a very Franciscan in the sense of Pope Francis, instinct. I mean, you know, Pope John Paul II spoke copiously about the new evangelization. And, Francis, really, when people ask me, I get a lot of people writing me and, or calling me or saying, you know, I don't understand what Francis is about, which mystifies me because I think Francis is an open book. And I, and what I, my response to people who are mystified by Francis, is everything you need to know about Francis is summed up in the words, he has preached good news to the poor. That is his whole mission is about evangelization and especially about evangelization as a work of mercy to the least of these. And that's really it. That's all you have to know. You know, everything falls into place. Everything that he says and does makes total sense if you look at it from that perspective. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that his very first thing that he does is release a letter called The Joy of the Gospel, which is all about evangelization.
Mm-hmm.
And what it really says, what it really says to me that so many people are baffled by him, is how far, the average Catholic is from grasping that the mission of the church is to evangelize. That's
right.
Not how we live as Catholics. Most of Catholic life, is consumed with, kind of guarding the fortress or, you know, arranging the furniture inside the house. It's not about opening the doors,
right,
to the people who are outside the house. And some people, are actively hostile to evangelization. They're not merely oblivious to it, but they really hate it, and they hate Francis for it. Because if you evangelize, well, you're going to be bringing in riffraff and people who don't care about your, you know, turf struggles and your, you know, agendas and all of that stuff. They're not interested in the internal politics of the church because they're there seeking Jesus, and that's why they came. And they've got all their weird problems and their addictions and, you know, confusion and questions and ways of thinking that don't comport with everything that you're used to. But that's what evangelization means. It means bringing
right.
in people from outside who do not think like you.
Right. Well, and it's hard because we find ourselves in this place of, like, I'll talk to people who are like, well, I just don't know anybody who's not Catholic. You know, and I'm just like,
that's a problem.
Seems like such a weird statement to me. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
And they said, well, I mean, like my mailman, I was like, great, talk to your mailman. Like, well, I mean, why would we talk to our mailman? Well, I mean, not because he's not Catholic, but because he's a person. Like, he's a human being in front of you. And why wouldn't you engage with him, right? Like, why wouldn't you desire to be in a relationship with him? And that's, I think, the real thing for me is we've actually really declined in our ability and capacity to actually just be in a relationship with other people. Because relationship doesn't dictate that we have to be identical. Actually, relationship dictates that we are two separate entities, each with our own will and thoughts, and that we've come together, like, to care for and love one another, right? Ideally.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand how people can only seek to be around other people who are so homogenous with them, or if they are, at least to not identify where are those differences and let's engage in those, not because for the sake of conflict, but for the sake of beauty and the way that God has built up his body with each part being unique. Right. So, I think the last piece for me is really like, we've lost our own ability to see ourselves as poor. We've lost our own ability to see our own lack. And so I think for people who really question Francis's behavior, my daily prayer practice is out of a Carmelite book called Divine Intimacy, which I just started a few months ago and is rocking my world. And I love it. But it's daily reflections. And right now it's this huge virtue formation session, but it's doing the parable of, the Good Samaritan, you know, and it's basically reflecting on the fact that lots of times we'll put ourselves in the position of, oh, like I'm the Samaritan, like I'm the Good Samaritan, I've got to be helpful to the guy in the ditch. Or every once in a while, in a moment of self-reflection, we might say, oh, there are times where, you know, I'm the Levite or I'm the Pharisee and I would cross the road. Like that is something I do from time to time. The reality is that very few of us ever put ourselves in the position of the person in the ditch. To me, in my world, in my experience, just reading, like, we're the person in the ditch. Mm-hmm. Like, that's who we are most of the time. And we actually are in need of somebody to come by and to lift us up and to carry us. I think we've lost that perspective a lot in the church. And we've lost the ability to understand that, you know, proclaiming good news to the poor is about going out and doing that. And it's also about being willing to receive that in the areas of your life in which you are poor.
Right.
And if you can't receive that, you're not going to have what you need to go out and do it for others. And I think for me, that's one of the biggest blocks I see right now. It's one of the reasons I love working in a parish community. And it's hard to kind of break through some of those walls. It's hard to knock on those walls and say, hey, like, you know, you've got to be able to identify that. Actually, if you're able this Sunday to come to St. Luke's, I know that you've got other parishes you like to go to Mass to on Sunday. Father Brad's homily this weekend, ooh, he's doing just that. I'm really, really excited about the charitable challenge he's presenting in the conversation.
Yeah. I love that guy, by the way. Father, we're talking about Father Brad Hagelin. Hagelin. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just a great guy. And runs a really nice taxi service too, I have to say. So I'm appreciative of that. My doctor's office is not far from your parish, and in a fit of overachieverness, I decided I was going to walk from my house to the doctor's office one day, which is, turns out, further away than I had anticipated. So I walked over there, and by the time I was there, I was like, this is a really long way back, and plus I've got things to do, and it's going to take me forever to get home. So I wound up calling your parish, saying, Father Brad, are you going to lunch soon? And is it north? And can I have a ride? He said, sure, no problem. So he drove over to the doctor's office and got me and took me home, yeah, which I thought was very kind of him. And I felt like a super jerk for doing it, but.
No, he's a good pastor.
Yeah. So,
I mean, he's a good shepherd. There are so many priests I know who are, and this is not about validity of priesthood or not the fact that they don't have amazing gifts, but there are not as many priests out there as there used to be who are actually really good pastors, who are good shepherds.
Mm-hmm.
And he is amazing in that capacity.
Yeah, he really, really is.
His other gifts. And yeah. So I love the way that he and Father Parrish both engage deeply with people and want people to be and know they're taken care of.
You know, when your name is Parrish, by the way, you're more or less destined to be a priest, I think. So
He was going to go by Father Colin because he thought it was weird that Father Brad went by Father Brad, and he was going to go by his last name. I was like, look, two things. You were a seminarian here. You got to get people to call you by your last name for a little bit. Two, your last name is Parrish. You can't waste that. You can't. That's obviously something God desires for you to use. And so.
Yes, and I love Father Colin too. He's very nice to me.
Yeah,
but So anyway, I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful for the work that you're doing. What is there something you want? Well, of course, part of what we need to do is talk about Catholic Beard Balm. So important. Because this is the part where my audience can actually help your ministry.
Yes. There are two invitations I'd love to make to people out there who are listening right now. So one is that if they have the ability to go out and just go to catholicbalm.co, that's catholicbalm.co, check out the products we have there. If something looks like something you would love to get for yourself or give to somebody else to be an everyday reminder of our universal call to holiness, I would love for you to get that. It helps support all the great things we talked about earlier. And right now, if you're listening to this, you can use the discount code Mark Says, that's MarkSays, to get 10% off any order you place. That's Mark Says
at
catholicbalm.co.
All right. Yeah. Mark Says at catholicbomb.co.
And then the other invitation I'd have is if you guys, since you guys are podcast listeners out there in the world, if you want to check out the Threshold Podcast, it's the one with the yellow and white label, or you can go to thresholdpodcast.fm. We'd love to have you give it a listen, give us any feedback you have, and if you like it, to subscribe or rate the podcast. That would be a real huge help to us. We're just launched it, and we're in that window where we can get that new and noteworthy badge, which helps get the work we're doing there out to other people, which helps get all the other ministry work we're doing out there to other people. So those are the two biggest things you can do to engage in what we're doing right now and to help us out as a ministry.
All right, fantastic. And when you do that, of course, as happened to me, you know, Catholic Beard Balm will transform you from a wormy, chop fallen cipher to a manly titan of Catholic awesomeness and, men only, by the way. This is for beards. Although I think you guys are going to be branching out to.
No, we already did. We've got a lotion bar for women. We've got lip balm for people regardless of their gender as long as they have lips. And I think 99.9% of Americans have lips.
Okay.
And so, there's other great stuff on there. Beard balm is our primary focus, but we've got other great things on there also.
Okay, so. You know, and Christmas will be here before you know it. So this is our, yes, it's the middle of September, and I have already invoked Christmas. But, you know, you have to plan these things ahead. It's very important. And so, you know, if you're looking for something that will transform your man from a wormy chop-fallen cipher into a titan of Catholic manly awesomeness, that is the thing for you. And if you are a person with lips, male or female.
Male or female.
Yes. Go to what's the website again?
CatholicBalm.co. That's CatholicBalm.co. And if you accidentally put in an M, it'll still work. But CatholicBalm.co.
Okay. And use the magic code Mark Says, S-A-Y-S. Mark with a K. And, you know, wonderful things will be unleashed in your life. And plus, you will be funding, ministries that are affecting people around the world, bringing the Catholic gospel, to people from here to Africa. And, you just can't do better than that. You know, it's win-win. So, any final, comments?
No, just that I really appreciate you having me on, and I look forward to the next time we get to hang out in person.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, Tony Vicinda. You have been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we will be back again bat channel, which is pretty much anytime, anywhere, as long as you have access to the Internet. So thanks for listening, and talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.